Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. This is your host, Rick Stevens. And folks, remember that this is your show. Folks, if you have got a topic you would like to hear a little bit more about, if there is a question you would love to have answered, feel free to give me a call at 719-500-8700. You can also send me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to the website, frsfinancialgroup.com, click that contact tab up there in the top right corner, send that question, send that topic. We would love to hear from you. Well, folks, this week on Money Matters, I am in studio with my co-host, Dan Cashel. Dan, how's it feel to be in studio with Sam Elliott today?
It does. It sounds exactly like Sam Elliott. It's beef. What's for dinner?
Yeah, exactly.
Beef. I don't know if it's the is it the allergies or is it? I mean, what's going on?
I think the answer is yes. There's that combination of allergies. Uh-huh. There's that little head cold type thing going on, but it's got the radio pipes today.
It does. I mean, you almost sound as deep as my voice.
Well, I'm trying. I really am.
A lot of people try, and you've gotten the closest to anybody, so that's pretty amazing.
I love it. Folks, today on Money Matters, we are talking about the real estate world, and we have with us a special guest, Dan.
Yes.
Justin Hermes has jumped into Money Matters. Justin, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. I feel a little lost. I'm the only one without a computer here.
Well, I mean, you got to be privileged. I mean, but it's okay.
I'm on my training wheels still.
You're on the training wheels. It's so great to have you. I have you on the phone every once in a while, but to be in studio with you in person, this is a first.
Yeah, might be a last, too.
Like, might be a last.
It was a little annoying. I think I'm done.
No. A lot to be said there.
But Rick, I appreciate you having me on. Listen to your show before. It's got a lot of good stuff in there, and it's important because, you know, money's a hot topic right now with inflation and savings, and it's not as easy. It doesn't feel as easy as it used to be.
No, it definitely is not anywhere near as easy as, you know, either A, when I was a kid, or you know, 3-4 years ago when I thought I was a kid, but really the body didn't say that. just throwing that out there. Full disclosure on that. One of those other disclosure pieces that we've got to throw out there, folks, is that LPL Financial and FRS Financial do not endorse the guests that appear on Money Matters because FINRA and the SEC says that's not acceptable. But we do have Justin Hermes with the Property Group. Folks, if you haven't listened to Justin, he is here on KRDO on Real Estate Realities, Saturday mornings at 10:30. And Justin, I got to say, I love the title of the show, Real Estate Reality, because that's what I like to talk about is reality. Because there's a whole lot of reality that's not out there that folks are thinking about, isn't there?
Yeah, and I can't take credit for the show title. Like, Neil...
Really?
Neil came up with that like 7 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So a shout out to Neil.
Yeah.
That was
He's
good.
He's probably on his couch right now eating a bag of Cheetos and watching hockey.
And he hates his name being mentioned in any way, shape, or form on the air. So, Neil, we won't say your last name, but you know who you are.
Yeah,
exactly.
So he came up with the name. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. You know, there's all kinds of stuff out there, and we're going to talk about a number of those real estate realities as we go through the show today. There's a lot of different things in the news. There are a lot of different things on social media, especially in that investing in real estate world. And quite frankly, they're not actually based in reality. Mm-hmm. I did a show several months ago all about the social media pieces that you hear about the investment and, hey, do this and, hey, do that. And I talked about the reality of what those don't actually have happening. But one of the big pieces in the news in the last several weeks, and I know there are a lot of, you know, questions and what in the world is really going on, and quite frankly, a lot of misinformation out there about what has been going on, and that's with the NAR settlement, the National Association of Realtors. There were all sorts of different lawsuits that were out. They settled all of these different lawsuits, and basically the settlement covers, for the most part, about 1 million realtors across the country, right? Protects you guys from some future lawsuits, I guess, for lack of a better term. They're paying about $400+ million over 4 years to all these different places, and there's a lot of misinformation out there in the media about what the settlement actually means. One of those pieces that that I've seen, and this has come even from the mouth of the President of the United States, right? The President of the United States says, this means that for the first time ever, commissions are negotiable.
And I think that's just because, you know, he wasn't able to negotiate when he sold his house.
Well, you know, it could have been, because that was probably 50 years ago, because I'm pretty sure the first house that I sold back in 2005, I'm pretty sure we negotiated commissions 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So what does the settlement itself actually mean and actually, you know, have to do with the consumer, the buyer, the seller of the home? How are they actually affected by the NAR settlement?
Yeah, it's a great question. And right now, it's 99% solid, right? But it hasn't been finalized in front of a judge yet. So it will be. And then in July, these things will go into place. So it's not immediate right now. But what's going to happen is you're going to see that co-op disappear off the MLS. That co-op is, you know, when somebody brings a buyer to your house, is what you're willing to pay them. And whether they be a transaction broker, a lot of people operate as buyer agency. They come, they bring you an offer, and you say, hey, this is what I'm willing to pay you. Whether it be 2%, 1.5%, 3%, you decide that with the listing agent. It's conversations, you know, I have all the time at a kitchen table. It's not, hey, we know we have to give 3, here you go. We negotiate it, and you know, I always tell people, hey, here's a bunch of listings in your area. This is what other sellers are giving out. All I recommend is we should somewhat be competitive, like we should on price.
Right.
Same thing. We haggle over price with sellers because they go, my house is worth $450. No, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, it's really worth $425. We negotiate that. We negotiate the commissions. And then on our side, we negotiate too. We always don't get 3%. I mean, it depends what's going on. Is that client buying another home? You know, have we already done business with them? So all the commissions have always been negotiable. But what's going to happen here is National Association of Realtors is going to continue fighting this. And legal fees were just, it was going to kill the organization.
Right.
And who won here out of these settlements is the average payout's only like $650 for the consumer. the attorneys won. They got half the money. And so it's not even that justice was served. It was these attorneys who've been, one of the gentlemen out of Minnesota has been working on this for 20 years.
Oh my goodness.
You know, they got paid. That's who won is the attorneys. And so for NAR to say, hey, we're going to settle, wise decision. And Berkshire Hathaway is the Home Service of America. They're the only ones who haven't settled. REMAX has settled. Keller Williams, I believe, has settled now. So the big brokerages also have their own settlements. And then NAR covers everyone who is a National Association of Realtor member. And, you know, it covers you during a certain time period. And as long as you're paying your dues and you belong to National Association of Realtors, there's about 400,000 who don't belong. And those are your commercial realtors. People go, well, who are the 400,000 don't belong? Commercial realtors don't belong to the board MLS.
Right.
They don't use it.
Right.
I'd say probably only 1% do. So you have those realtors who don't belong to the National Association of Realtors.
So in the big picture, right? And you know, we've kind of talked a little bit about this, right? As a seller, I sold the house that I lived in Wheaton, Illinois, in West Chicago, Illinois, one up in Monument, one here in town. Never once did I consider, as the seller, the commission that was going to be paid in how I wanted the house to be priced. But I hear all the time, this is going to drive the housing prices down.
Yeah.
What's really going to happen for the consumer, whether it's the seller or the buyer? Is it really going to have much impact, period?
No, I don't think it will. I mean, the biggest impact right now is interest rates, and they're up and down. They're fluctuating. You know that probably as well as anybody does. And so that's what's sensitive right now is the interest rates. And then you also have this thing where people are saying, well, prices are continuing to go up and up. Prices are up. Realtors always want to paint a rosy picture, right?
Right.
Prices are good. They're going up. It's appreciating. It's going to be worth more and more. Well, here's the deal. Over the last year, 50% of home sales came from new builds. What have new builds been doing? They've been selling you a house at 575. They've been spending $40,000 to buy down the rate to get it at, you know, 5.25, four and a half. So people don't consider that all that data's coming in is skewed. They don't report what the builders are giving the buyers in concessions. Why don't we report concessions? And then even on resale, sellers are going, hey, I'm giving $20,000 to buy down your rate, right? So I believe we've already seen prices go through the last 8 months of a strong dip. And there's houses out there you can see that were $500,000 at the peak that are now 4.25. And now guess what? There's multiple offers again. Prices are going back up. And so I think we've already kind of seen the little dip in the market. And as if we get a decrease in interest rates, you know, the market's going to completely fly up. But I don't think at all the consumer is not going to go, oh, I can price it for less now. You're right, somebody. But no, they're going to still want their price. I mean, that's just, you know, there's all these people who want to go drastic. Say, oh, this is the housing market crash now. Well, the shortage of inventory and the people with golden handcuffs who have interest rates, what is it, 85% of people have an interest rate below 5% in the United States.
Right.
They're not moving because of that.
Right.
And that's what's going to keep prices elevated. There's not enough inventory.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we've talked about here on Money Matters several times over the last few years. Anytime we've talked real estate, and you know, obviously you hear the statement, and you're going to know this is true more than any of the rest of us, that all real estate is local, right? And local is, you know, quite frankly, not just El Paso County as a whole, but even all the way down to a neighborhood kind of local there. And with all of these things in mind, there could be these different, you know, markets going on in Phoenix or in Atlanta and the suburbs that we're not going to see in Colorado Springs.
100% correct. Yeah. Austin's seeing one of the largest decreases in the nation, right? I mean, and they've had a lot of job growth, but you know, they've had some overbuilding going on, whatnot. Here we haven't. Your builders have kind of pulled back, actually, from how much they're building. So we've seen it suppressed. But you mentioned areas. I always just tell people, keep it simple. If you buy around new construction and you're right in the builder's backyard and they're going to be building for the next 10 years, you're probably not going to see the same price appreciation as you would if you bought in a neighborhood that doesn't have new build construction going on, because they're not adding supply.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, that's kind of what I tell people. And then also it's, you know, you have to be aware of metro districts, which we've never had to really be aware of in the past, and elevated taxes. So you can go to an area like Lorson Ranch and go, holy smokes, the taxes on this house is $6,000. It's as much as the house in the Broadmoor that's 1.2.
Right.
Metro districts, all that. So, and you have insurance that comes into play. It used to be pretty simple. What are your taxes and insurance? Well, we use 100 for taxes, 100 for insurance, $200 is your TI, this is your PI. Now it's a whole nother ball game. Not every area plays equally. So you're completely right that every pocket reacts differently.
Yeah, it's very interesting. We actually got it was last week, I think, the letter from the mortgage company that said, oh, by the way, your monthly payment is going up, and I think we went up $250 because there was going to be an escrow shortfall because I don't know if you've heard this yet, Justin, but this year El Paso County taxes have gone up.
Really?
I don't know. I don't know if you'd heard that.
Yeah.
And insurance is also
gone up.
Right? So when you've got those pieces that are part of that escrow company is looking at it going, you're not going to have enough money available, and we've got to pull this up because there's going to be too much of a shortfall going on.
Yeah.
We can't, you know, equal that out next year. Next month, this is when this is going to kick in.
Yeah, and reality is 5 years ago, for a majority of people, your taxes were half what they were now.
Yep.
And your insurance was half. That's how it is for me. My insurance was $1,200 on my house. Now it's $2,400, and my taxes were $800. Now they're $1,900.
Right.
For a $450,000 house.
Yeah.
So that's tough sledding for a lot of people, especially people who aren't fixed income. They're retired. They're living off Social Security. It's not as easy as it used to be.
No, not in the least. So let's talk a little bit on that local real estate side here. I pulled up some of the numbers a couple of days ago, and looking year over year at El Paso County, my first set of numbers, I went, wow, that's really crazy, because that's not what the article said, and I discovered they were February to February, not March to March. I went, oh, can I make that link, the current month link? Anyway,
yeah.
So year over year, El Paso County as a whole, down a little bit in total closed sales on single family homes, right? Mm-hmm. Not the multifamily units, but single family. But we're also down a little bit in new listings. And you talked about, you know, builders being a big portion of that, and they've slowed some stuff down. But the average sales price is actually up. So, total number of homes for sale, also a little bit up. So the average time on market is also just under 2 months. I think the thing I saw for March said like 53 days.
Mm-hmm. You're correct.
So just under 2 months. This was the best part that I saw. The purchase price is averaging just over 99% of the list price. Mm-hmm. And I have so many places telling me we're in a buyer's market. How in the world can I put those things together, especially where the average sale price is 99% of the list? And I know you guys are good. You know how to price things properly.
Yeah.
But with a 99%+ sale price compared to list price, how in the world is that a buyer's market?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Over the last, I would say, before entering into April, it was a buyer's market for, I would say, the last 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And now what you're seeing there is what I mentioned before, is it's skewing the numbers. What was happening is we were coming in and saying, yes, Mr. Sayre, we'll pay you full price, but I want $25,000 in closing costs. So you're seeing it and you're going,
right.
Oh, well, the home for $450 went for $450. You know, we're like, no, it didn't. It went for $25,000 less. But they don't report. They don't report seller concessions, which is silly that they don't report it. It's too much effort to report it. And when you get seller concessions,
it's just the details, Justin. Yeah. It's just the details.
Yeah, right? But you get seller concessions that are, I mean, like all last year, all the seller concessions I was getting for my buyers were like $20,000-$30,000. If you don't report that data, yes, it does look like it's still 99%. Now, over the last 2 weeks, consumers, I think, there's one of two things. Consumers have gone, okay, it's higher for longer. So the people who are holdouts going, Fed's going to lower the rate, you know, at the beginning of the year, and rates are going to magically go back to 5%. I think those people are like, okay, I am living in la-la land. Okay, I'm just
finally.
I am going to buy the house. I'm not going to continue to wait. So you have that, number one. And number two, you have a massive amount of agents going, wait, in July, I don't get paid for all these buyers who I have in my pocket right now. I better step up my game. I better start working them extra hard to get them all under contract before July. Because the last 2 weeks I've been out, areas like Stetson Hills, Pulpit Rock, they're all multiple offers. If you're below 600,000, multple offers, $25,000 above list, no seller concessions, appraisal gaps are in effect again. And I think that's one of two things. Yes, inventory's low. People are realizing rates aren't going to take a dip. But I think the biggest one is all the realtors out there going, got to put my buyers under contract, because in July, I'm going to have that conversation to the buyers and say, hey, you're going to have to start paying for my services.
Yeah. Yeah. Big conversations coming down the pike that way. As we look through the Colorado Springs area, El Paso County area, I know I've got clients who I just happened to see in my Facebook feed the other day that the house next door to them was up for sale. It just popped somewhere in my Facebook feed, and I went, oh my goodness. And I clicking on it, I'm going, it's the exact same layout as theirs. What are they listing that at? And it's about $80,000 more than the last time I chatted with my clients. And it's basically the identical house.
Mm-hmm.
They've got all the same kind of improvements here and there. Are there pockets in town where you are seeing this sort of thing? Because they're in Village 7.
Yeah.
And are there pockets in town where you're seeing, hey, this is where the real estate market is starting to heat up.
I would say if you're not in areas that have high HOAs, that's another thing that we saw this last year is all of a sudden insurance premiums have gotten double. You know, like my dad's community went from like $70,000 premium to $120,000 a year.
Wow.
So HOA dues went up. So you have an area like Cobblestone that went from $350 to $600 overnight.
Wow.
Right? So those costs are increasing, and you have a lot of seniors who live in townhouses like that. But back to the topic there was you have areas like Meridian Ranch that have a $250 or around in the 200s for the water district, HOA, right. Stuff like that. You have the metro districts like in Sterling Ranch. You have elevated taxes. So the areas that have all those extra costs is where you're seeing more inventory, mm-hmm. right? And you're seeing more inventory. Large majority of it is out east, right? So if you look at all the new build out east, that's where you're seeing additional inventory. And then if you go west, that's where you're seeing less inventory. So I'd say some of the areas that have extremely low inventory and that are hot is areas like, you know, a Holland Park, an area over like Peregrine, Kissing Camels. I mean, even in the $1 million range, stuff just flies off the market there. Cheyenne Canyon, District 12, Spring Downs. Those are just areas that are still really, really active. And then you have Widefield that is performing extremely well. You know, South Fountain, not as well as Widefield, but I would say you just kind of follow that line and, you know, you're on the west side of the map of Colorado Springs.
Right.
With some outliers of like Patty Jewett's like insanely hot. North End's insanely hot. Mm-hmm. And it gets a little less hot as you go east. But like I said, Stetson Hills, still phenomenal. But you head out to Lorson Ranch, that's where you're seeing homes on the market. 100-120 days, you're seeing foreclosures, Lorson Ranch,
right?
Stuff like that. So,
well, as a guy who just got his HOA bill for 2024, and I'm paying $65, I'm okay with that. I'm up in Glen Eagle.
Yeah, but you're probably in a limited HOA, right? They're not doing your lawn and.
They supply water for the picnic. That's it.
Yeah, so there you go.
That's it.
Yeah, the other ones that are tough is when you're keeping up a pool,
right.
Clubhouse. People go, oh, that's great, as these amenities. And I go,
you're kind of paying for those.
Yeah, and guess what? The pool and all that, it's going to get redone eventually. And
and there's going to be a hailstorm that comes through, and everybody's got to pay to put the new roof on and all that fun stuff.
Yep, so there's a little more liability than there used to be.
Yeah, for sure in there. Well, folks, we are up against that break in today's show. When we come back, we are going to talk some practical things in here in the real estate reality world. And Justin, I'm also going to ask a few social media questions because I see weird things that come through my social media feed.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you do.
So, folks, stick around with us. We will be right back.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Well, folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break right here. Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group on KRDO. Justin Hermes with the Property Group and with Real Estate Realities. Saturday mornings at 10:30 on the show with us this week. And Justin, I don't know. It might be my Gen X personality. It might just be, I don't know, something about me being weird. I don't entirely know, but I get all of these different things that show up in my social media feed, you know, the Facebook reels and the Instagram stuff, and the bulk of them are either about investing or real estate. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, almost 100% of them are wrong. We did a show a few months ago on all the wrong things that show up on social media. But I got to bring this one up because I nearly busted out laughing when I saw this. So I'm scrolling through the feed, and there's a guy who's talking into the camera. He's trying to get, well, first, he's trying to get everybody to sign up for his $5,000 seminar. Yeah. So I know how he makes money in real estate.
Yeah.
It's not in real estate.
Yeah, exactly. Good amount of people out there. Like that.
But he says, come to the seminar, and I'm going to teach you how to flip a $100,000 home, and you're only going to put about $20,000 of upgrades in it and sell it for $200,000. So I'm going to start with all these small pieces. I'm going to break this thing out. Where do you find a $100,000 home to flip? That's somewhere around like Hayes, Kansas?
Yeah, I would say not here.
I mean, that's my first question. Where do you find that $100,000 home to flip? Because I've seen vehicles priced close to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That might have been the real estate reality 25 years ago. I could have found a $100,000 home. So that doesn't exactly exist out there. Then here's the next piece, my logical follow-up to that. What in the world can I do to a house that's going to cost me $20,000? And I'm not even going to take his, it's going to double the value. I'm just going to say, where am I going to increase the value by $100,000 by dumping $20,000 into something?
Yeah, people want to paint, kind of a Cinderella story when it comes to flipping houses. And it's not that way. We do the buy and hold approach. We help people purchase, they fix it up, and then we hold it as a rental. We don't work with flippers. It's just something we don't desire to do.
Right.
But I just think the big part of it is anybody who's done a remodel who's listening to this knows that you can't do much for $20,000 anymore. It's kind of sad. It's
you,
the inflation.
You might be able to retile a small bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right? I mean, so it's just, if it's too good to be true, it usually is. When you're making a quick buck, I'm sure it's the same thing in your industry. People go, well, I day trade, I do this. It goes, okay, that's good for you. I mean, I usually just go, that's great. I don't even argue with people. And we're like, okay, you flipped a home, made, all this money. Okay, It's just there's usually elements to that story they're not including, right? I mean, so the whole thing on flipping homes is here I have friends who do it. And colleagues, who flip homes. And I know they've pulled back a lot because they're like, Justin, the margins don't make sense, the cost of the materials. So, like, right. I know people who are good at it. They like that industry. That's good for them. I don't like it, but they've found success with it in the past. And I know they're like, we're kind of sidelining. So the real pros out there who make a living doing this, they're getting out of the deep end. I'll put it that way.
It's a good way to put it. It's like the one that I saw. It was either yesterday or the day before as I was scrolling through where send us the money and subscribe to our software and we'll teach you the system because this guy made $15,000 on this particular stock just by buying it Friday and selling it on Monday. And I went back through the entire length of that particular stock. And at the best Friday to Monday, it was up 10%. On a Friday to Monday. And that means he had to own almost $300,000 worth of that stock to get what they said he got in the trade. Like you kind of forgot to mention that. You didn't say owned. Yeah, you didn't say he owned $100 worth. It was $300,000 worth to get that kind of money out of there. It's crazy. So we know that you can't just do a $20,000 update to a house and increase the value by $100,000. What are some of those maybe lower cost things that folks can do, especially when you're talking sweat equity, that is going to not necessarily add value per se to the home, but to get it ready to sell?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. First, we'll start with, and I'm not sure if you, I would guess you probably have the same mindset when it comes to your business, but we call it the Warren Buffett approach to real estate. We go, hey, you come in the office, you want to make a quick buck. And, like you said, you see a lot of stuff. You do YouTube, real estate investing. It's guys driving Lamborghinis and flashing checks. And, we go, well, if you want to make it quick, we're probably not a good fit
right.
for you. You know,
exactly.
We're slow and steady wins the race. And I go back and I show people the graph over time and I go, Here's the deal. If you hold real estate 10 to 15 years, you do pretty darn good. The people who bought, who, you know, were managing their properties and they bought in 07, they bought at the peak of the market and they held it just even to 17.
Yeah.
Right? We stepped in, we managed the property and they had to sell because they were underwater. They're going, hey, my home value doubled. And the people who are holding it through 07 to now are going, hey, it's tripled.
Right.
What does that tell you? It's not, hey, we're a we're geniuses when it comes to doing real estate. It's, hey, we look back at the graph from, you know, 1930 until now, and what we've learned is there's dips that happen.
Yep.
But if you hang in there, you don't panic, and you don't, the average American moves every 5 to 6 years. So there are people who go, oh, well, yeah, I mean, I lost a bunch of money in real estate. Well, if you kept the house, there's other things. You can rent the home, which is a great thing for some people to do, is keep it and rent it.
Yeah.
Then you can weather the storm. And like a lot of people did, they ended up selling and they've made good money. So that's the first thing is don't think that, you know, a quick upgrade is going to get you the most money. What's going to get you the most money is buying an established neighborhood, low taxes. You make your money on the buy. You don't make it when you sell. You make it when you buy.
Yes.
And then you hold it. You don't panic. Like I'm sure you tell your clients when the market goes out, you don't call and go, pull it. Okay, now I'm back in. Pull it. I mean,
I actually use the house as the story with that to go, hey, when your home values dropped in 2007, 8, 9, you didn't sell, did you? Well, no. Well, that's why we don't sell the investments either.
There you go. Yeah. And so that's the exact deal is, you know, hey, you hire a professional just like you are, right? And you go, I've been through it. I know. Let's not panic. Okay? So that's the first thing with housing. Don't panic. Hold it. Prices come up. They go down. They adjust off interest rate. And if you're down or you're going, hey, like our house value is like 475, now it's 400, you know, and we want to move, but we don't want to pay taxes when we sell it. Well, here's the deal. You only have to live in the house 2 out of 5 years. That means you can rent it for 2 years, weather the storm, see what happens with the election, come back and go, hey, great. Now we can sell it. And for a majority of people, you're going to cash flow because rents are higher. You're going to be making passive income. Then you can turn around and sell it. So that's the number one blanket thing. Don't think that selling's the only option. And for some people, there was a great article about boomers not giving up inventory because they're going, we're staying in our bigger homes. And you know what? The people go, oh, you know, the millennials, they should sell. You know what? No, they don't need to sell because they're financially responsible. The boomers have done a great job with their finances.
Mm-hmm.
They probably own the house free and clear.
Yep.
And they're going to go, you know what? Yeah, we're just going to adjust some things in the house, make it handicap accessible, and we're going to stay here, you know, and be just fine. But to answer the original question, kitchen and master bath, put it simply, that's what drives the home value. Kitchen, master bath. Don't go do a bang-up job on your basement. Don't go remodel the basement bathroom. Remodel the master bath. Remodel the kitchen. I've done this. I've painted cabinets. You can sand them, paint them. Cabinets are very expensive now.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
So you can reface them. Update hardware. You know, you can put in new countertops very inexpensively. You can get stainless steel appliances. Those are one things that haven't gone up. You can get a stainless steel package still for like $2,200, which is what it was like 5 years ago.
And if you go to Costco, you might even get it for less.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, I think that is definitely something to do. And then flooring, if you live in a house that's like 50, 60, 70s, just refinish the hardwood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in a house the other day, the person wanted to rip it out and put like the new LVP in, and I'm like, no, consumers love the actual hardwood. Keep it, refinish it.
Yes.
So I think, you know, flooring can be a hot topic, kitchen, master bath. And if you have an unfinished basement, you decide to finish it, do not just put a large rec room in there. Always add a bedroom, always add a bathroom.
Yes.
Because that's what's going to drive your resale.
Yeah. Yeah. Years back, 4 or 5 years ago when we were looking at houses, we had looked at one. And you walk into the basement, you're going, this is a really cool place, but I've got 6 kids and they need a place to stay at night. And I don't need in my basement this giant, basically it was just a great big bar. There's a pool table in the middle. There was an actual wet bar there. They had the fridge. They've got the theater set up next to the side. And I'm going, where are my kids going to sleep?
Yeah. You're like, this is the opposite that I need for my kids.
This would be cool if it were just me.
Yeah.
You know, sit here, watch a ball game, have guys over.
Yeah.
some of those different pieces out there, when you're working with folks on whether it's the buy or the sell side, what are some of the things that you do with clients to actually get them ready for what's pretty much going to either be the purchase of the largest investment in their life or the sale of the largest investment of their life? How do you work with folks on that, Justin?
Well, I mean, it depends where most people are selling and buying something else, right? There are some people out there who are selling and they're moving into a retirement facility, assisted living, whatnot. So then those people were going, hey, here's your net sheet, right? This is what you're going to make on your house. You feel it's worth $500,000 and you're going to come out with like 470. And, you know, you should talk with, the assisted living on, is it a monthly pay or is it a buy-in? How does that look financially? You know, does it make sense? Most people lean to that now because getting in home health care is like
right.
so expensive.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Very
so
much
they're going,
so.
Okay. You know, and so that conversation is a little simpler, right? Because
right.
it's like, there's not as many different options.
Yeah.
I should say. So, with somebody who's say, you know, selling and then they're going to buy and they're maybe saying, hey, we're going to downsize. It's what can we net on your house? Okay. 470. What do you owe on it? Right. Are you going to be able to go in and pay cash for the next home? Which a lot of people who are older, they want that. They
right.
want to own the home outright, especially with higher rates today. You want to pay cash if you can. So we talk that over and then say, hey, all right, great. This is realistic. This is the stuff out here. We show them and they say, yeah, okay, we can buy what we want with the cash we've left over. Great. Let's do it. Now, then you get the other majority, and we work younger and younger usually and to get into this category. And the younger is going, hey, how much can I make? Okay, I can make $120,000 after my mortgage payoff. All right, the new home we want to buy is $500,000. Okay, how much money do we need down? $100,000, 20% down. We want mortgage insurance. Let's talk with the lender. Let's talk about rate. Okay, your new payment's $3,200. Your payment now is like $2,300. Are you, because it's usually a big jump.
Right, right.
Are you financially, you know, do you feel comfortable with that? And, you know, there's more people now who step back and they go, geez.
Right.
I didn't know it was going to be that much more. And then we say, well, why don't you wait? Because mm-hmm. you don't want to make that financial decision and feel strapped, especially right.
right
now. You should have money and savings, in my opinion, to be playing things a little more careful.
Right.
And so that's the conversation. If they can do it, great. They may say, yeah, I got a new job and I'm making more money. That's not a problem. Then, you know, we move forward with that. So we dial that in. We talk about taxes, the insurance on the new home, the new utilities on the new home. Sometimes
yes.
people are getting a bigger home. They don't think about, oh, I have to water a massive lawn now. And so we try to, you know, talk over those things.
It's going to cost more to heat this place than the 1,500 square feet I was in before.
Yeah, it used to not matter, right? You'd be like,
right.
oh, well, your utilities just go from 100 to 200. It's like, no, your utilities are going from 200 to like 600 maybe.
Right.
That's a big jump for people. So, you know, that's kind of the conversation we have with people when they're looking to transition. But the big thing is making sure you're comfortable making that jump. I always tell people, you're going to make the decision on the house whether you want it or not. I'm going to help make sure it's not a bad financial decision.
Right.
And like, I'm not going to sell you a house. I'm just here to pump the brakes going, ooh, this one backs to Mark Shuffle. Maybe going to have some resale issues here and we're going to get more
right.
more road noise. Or, hey, maybe, you know, you're pushing a little bit the budget here. We maybe need to wait a year, save some more. We're never going to push somebody into a purchase, but if we're going, hey, all thumbs up here, then that's when we go, all right, now it's our turn to negotiate hard and get you the best, you know, price possible. It's not our job to go in and say, you should buy this house.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. I love that. That's the approach, in there, you know, because I sit down with folks and we will talk about, you know, are we ready to buy a house? And I will oftentimes, you know, go through, okay, from the financial perspective, you've got the ability to deal with this kind of a monthly payment and mm-hmm. here. And then I throw my homeowner hat on and go, okay, now, as a guy who has to fill in all the nail holes, make sure the grass is growing, mm-hmm. make sure that the dryer vent has been cleaned out, mm-hmm. all that fun stuff, are you ready to do these sort of things? Is there a series of things maybe that you go through with folks who are looking to get out of the rental world into the homeownership world to kind of help them figure out, yes, we are ready for some homeownership?
Yeah, I think the big thing is it's the adjustment, right? So like right now, We're like, I just rent a house in Stetson Hills for $2,400. To buy that house, you're at $3,800. So, I mean, it's just like a $1,500 swing. And so we used to sit there and go, not like I'm going to sit here and discourage home ownership, but I will say, before Trump changed the tax code, we would sit and say, guess what, Mr. Buyer? You're going to write off your interest mm-hmm. and things like having home ownership. Here's the financial benefits, right? Now it's more, hey, you control your destiny. No one's going to sell it from out underneath you. You can paint the walls if you want. No one's going to, you know, your taxes insurance may go up, but no one's going to jump the rent $500 next
right.
year. Here's all the positives, but financially, you're at the standard deduction. So a lot of people, I'm like, you're not going to get the benefit from owning, mm-hmm. you know, a primary. You get it from owning a rental property right away because right. it goes right. on top of the standard deduction. But, you know, really, it's we're very cautious with people right now because, unfortunately, with more people, I've said, hey, probably good to rent for another year. And it hurts our sales when we
right.
do that. But
right.
it's like, you know, you're depleting all your savings for the down payment. And I know you're pushing yourself like for your monthly budget, and you can save $1,500 for a whole nother year. You can save
right.
like another $18,000 if you don't buy. And that's the long game,
right?
right? That's where it's like,
right.
hey, you know, I'm not in business to make a sale this month. It's like next year, you're probably in a better place to purchase. Well, what if prices go up? What if prices go up?
Yeah.
I mean, we can't control that, but what we control is the now.
Yep.
And unfortunately, there's a whole other segment that gets pushed to buyers, which is sad. And you're seeing it with people who are in foreclosure now and
right.
short sales. And that is one of, hey, and I've even heard someone at a title company say this at closing, and I just made my head want to
Ooh.
Explode. When the person had an adjustable interest rate, I was on the listing side,
mm-hmm.
so I didn't have the buyer.
Right.
They had a 2-1 buy down, and the buyer didn't know till closing. It was really sad to see,
yeah.
you know, and, but I'm representing my people, so I don't say anything.
Right.
They got their agent and they said, what do you mean after 2 years, our payment goes up 700? Well, this is a 2-1 buy down. We set aside money and artificially this looks good for the first
right.
2 years. And there was kind of some, I could tell there was a little emotion going on there. And the closer goes, don't worry, rates will go down in the next 2 years and you just refinance. And I'm sitting there going, well, I wish I had a tape recorder to hear you say that.
Right.
That is one of the most foolish things to ever
yeah.
tell somebody because that you do not know that.
Right.
And a lot of realtors get, I shouldn't say a lot, but there's some realtors and some lenders who go, that is the biggest pitch right now is get an adjustable
yeah.
rate, get a 2-1 buy down. Well, we can't afford it. Like, well, no worry. It's going to refinance. Rates will drop. What do they say? Marry the house, date the mortgage. And it's like,
yeah.
I tell people, if you can't afford it now, and we do fixed rate products, we're not going to bait
right.
you into something. And then all of a sudden you're going, whoa, it's way higher and rates didn't drop. Justin, what do I do? We go, here's the deal. You do a fixed rate. We play conservative ball. And if you can't afford it now, don't speculate.
Right.
Never speculate. Never speculate. Oh, well, prices go up. You know, prices are going to go up. Interest rates are going to go down. No, you don't speculate. If you can't afford it today, don't buy it. And so for a lot of people, it's saying, don't buy it. Some other people go and they purchase with another agent. It is what it is. I'm just like, it's my job to say you're making a
yeah.
financial decision that you're betting on something that is honestly, you're betting against history. If you look back to what's
right.
gone on and what this is similar
right.
to 1980s, because rates kept going higher.
Yeah.
So I don't see there's a bunch of logic there. And I want
yeah.
your opinion. You tell me what you think about rates and like, do you think I'm being way too conservative? I mean,
well, I will start with, I like the conservative side of it because when I'm working with the folks, I really go, okay, let's assume that the worst case situation is the one we're dealing with because we're going to work in that world and anything better is better,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't have to go, well, I was working in the Pollyanna world and oh my goodness, this is what actually happened. So I like working on that worst case scenario side. I have probably been one of the few folks in the investment world and what we saw go on in markets in February and at the beginning of April, I think it's kind of proof positive of that. I'm one of the few guys that has believed Jerome Powell when he said higher for longer. I don't know why somebody thought there could be a January drop in rates. I don't know why anybody thought there could have been a March.
So you don't think inflation's under control?
I believe it or not, you know, as a guy that taught economics for 15 years, yeah. I kind of
had... Your groceries haven't gone down?
Of course, you know, who knew, right? Yeah. Who knew that the cost of things would continue to go up over time?
Because it is funny, right? People go, oh, well, inflation's under control, yeah. And I go...
How much did you pay for bacon 2 weeks ago yeah. versus this week?
Inflation, so...
Yeah, yeah, so it's...
So what do you think? You say higher for longer, though, do you think... We'll get a rate increase, or do you think it just means they're going to try to hold the line as hard as they can?
I think they will hold the line with where they're at. I think they have stopped ratcheting up for now. Mm-hmm. Although I was actually surprised that the last rate increase was actually June, July last year, not September. Mm-hmm. I was expecting a September or November increase
last year
as well.
Yeah.
And then if you do the math, it's 8 to 18 months is how long most of those pause cycles are. If June was the last one last year and we're going higher for longer, I think now it becomes how political does the Fed want to look?
Yeah.
Because the 15 months is September, the 18 months is your November. Are you going to drop it before the election or right after? That's when I think we might start to see some stuff come down, but I don't think it's going to drop off the cliff either.
Yeah,
I think we're going to see an eighth of a point come off. I don't think we're even going to see a quarter for the first couple of rate pulldowns. And quite frankly, I think it will probably take at least 2 years to get back to what the Fed wants to have as their rate in that 4% range.
I think you're totally right. It's just it's political. If it wasn't election year, I would say probably even no rate cuts.
Right. Right.
You know, but you're like, yeah, they'll probably, you know, and it's funny, gas is going up, rates are staying higher, but they're, you know, they always play that game right before the election. So it's like, I think you're right. They're going to try to somewhat give a little push of positivity.
Yeah. So most of the discussions I've had with folks are, do I think mortgage rates will come down? Yes. Mm-hmm. Where do I think they will settle is a much bigger discussion. And for the most part, I've told folks 4.5 to 5.5, somewhere in that range, because quite frankly, that's normal. What we've seen for the last 15 years has not been normal in the mortgage rate world.
You're 100% right in that fact, because before COVID, the average rate over the 40 years prior for a 30-year home mortgage was 8%.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've gone back to look to see what we paid for the first house that we bought in 1999, and I'm like, oh, that was a pretty big rate. Interesting. And even, you know, you could go on, and I don't know how many folks know about this, but you could go to the El Paso County Assessor's website. You type in an address, you can see over the years what people borrowed at mm-hmm. their rate that they borrowed at. And if you go back 5 and 10 years, stuff was over 6.25, 6.5.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the normal side of what we've got to pay.
Yeah, and people forget, too, right before COVID happened, they were pushing rates.
Yes,
they were,
yes.
Because I remember 18, I was like, geez, man, investment property, like 6.5%? Like, I had a VA loan at 5%. Like, all of a sudden, it was like, man, that rate's terrible.
Right.
And then because of COVID, they slashed them. So they were trying to work them up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's just they couldn't with what happened.
Yep, absolutely. And then when it comes time to really have that discussion, you know, I'm a Dave Ramsey guy. I'm a Dave Ramsey fan. But Dave and I actually disagree on baby step number one, because that first baby step, right, having that $1,000 emergency fund, I tell folks that works if you're a renter. If you're a homeowner, that needs to be closer to $5,000, because what's the price of the furnace when
Even
it goes
10.
Out? What's the price of your deductible for wind and hail damage? What's the price of a new water heater? Because
yeah,
you've
totally
got to pay
right.
for that now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can deplete savings all we want to make that down payment. But if I don't have at least $5,000 sitting there, no, don't do it. Bad
well, in
idea.
In today's world, too.
I mean,
it's ridiculous. And the only other piece of advice I'd give there is some people who find themselves low on having savings and they're owning a home, go buy a home warranty for like $750 for like 2 years.
Yes.
And go, okay, I'm at least covered if the big ticket items go out. Now, you know, like you said, you can ramp up more money with peace of mind going, okay, now we're building it. What Rick said, we're getting $5,000-$10,000 in the bank. We're good. But in the meantime, if we have a setback, it's not going to put us into credit card debt.
Exactly. Exactly in there. So there are a lot of folks out there, a lot of listeners out there that maybe have kids or grandkids that are in that 20 to 30 age range, right? The millennials, the Gen Zs who, you know, we do hear a lot on the, oh no, I'll never be able to buy a house. I can't own this. What are some pieces of advice that perhaps they could pass on as a parent or as a grandparent to that child, to that grandchild in their 20s and 30s, thinking about, is it the right time to buy my first house?
I would say the biggest piece of advice you can give them is don't be picky and just be fortunate that you can purchase a place no matter what it looks like. Because unfortunately, there is a good amount of people out there who want the instant perfect house. They want the stainless steel. They want, oh, I need all this. I need this. I need that. You know, we're going to continue renting until we can get that home we want. You know, right. And I go, okay, my first purchase was a small condo. And then my sister co-signed with me. Then my next one was a, you know, house by Memorial Park for $240,000 that my sister also co-signed on with me because I was working commission and you got to have 2 years, right?
Yep.
And it was basic Formica countertops, no updates. And I'm like, great, I got my foot in the door. Cool. I don't need to go from 0 to 100 and go, all right, now I have a house where I can, you know, feel like I'm super cool when I have my friends over and everyone check out all my updates in my house and every. No. If you can purchase now, get your foot in the door with a townhouse.
Yeah.
You can keep that maybe as a rental when you buy your next house, but like get in the game. But for some reason with our generation, it's like, well, if I can't have the best, then I don't want any.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, why were the baby boomers so great? Because they bought homes. Like my grandfather bought one on Union for like $30,000. He was so grateful to have that home and he could walk down to an Air Force base. And then he slowly got another home. Then he finally moved up to his last home on Condor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, hey, I don't need to have all the bells and whistles right away.
Right.
So that's the biggest piece of advice. I think if I can learn from the generations before us, because I think they're really smart. The generations before us are way smarter than my generation.
Yep.
I try to look at what they do and I go, oh, my grandfather did a great job with finances. He never made a ton. He didn't have this big glamorous job. It doesn't have to do with how much money you make. It's how you handle it, right? I mean, I'm sure you know all this. So it's going, okay, he didn't have to have instant the best house, instant all these things. He was willing to go, okay, well, this is what we can have now. Let's enjoy what we have now. And if we can get something maybe a little bit bigger, like they would say back then, like 200 square feet bigger instead of us. It's like, I have a 2,000 square foot house, I want 4,000.
Right.
Then they were like, okay, great, let's do it. And I'm sure you see the same thing with my generation. People going, well, you know, I want to make 20% on my money.
Yeah.
I mean, do you?
So I.
How's our generation interact with you? Is it that way or are they long? And it's not blanketing everyone because everyone's different, but I would say the biggest difference between baby boomers and my generation, what do you see as that when they come into your office?
You know, the interesting thing is, and I don't necessarily want to throw this out there as that blanket statement, but quite frankly, all the generations, we all start out the same. We actually all start out, because I can even remember this back when my wife and I bought our first house, and we had to have the conversation of, don't buy the house that your parents have. Because it took them 30 years to get to that house. Don't start there,
mm-hmm.
right? Same sort of thing. No, today when you're opening this account, next year we're not going to have $250,000 in it putting away $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 10, 15, 20-year plan to get to those numbers based on what we're putting in. There are some that sit there and they do think about the long game and, okay, wow, I actually had this conversation with a couple last week. They could put away $400 a month into their retirement plans based on a 10 to 12% growth over the next 30 years. They should have like $1.2 million. And they went, wow, really? That's all it takes? So they were able to see that long range plan. But there are others that are like, hey, I got $1,000 now. I want $30,000 next year. What do I do? And I usually go Cripple Creek.
Yeah, put it on Lotto. Black, baby.
Double zero. Go with, just put a double zero. Go. You only need to hit once.
I mean, I just admire that, especially the generation even before the greatest generation.
I mean, their
ability to save, and I think it's partially because they went through the Great Depression. They saw, right. But the way they handled money, and just their gratitude, I think, is just something to admire.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, just if folks have those real estate questions, obviously tune in Saturdays, 10:30. But if they've got a question and they want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Just cell phones easiest, 719-232-1063. That's 232-1063. And then our office is downtown, 305 South Cascade. You can always pop in there as well. We're always open Monday through Friday, 9 to 4.
Awesome. Awesome. So as we wrap this piece up here, is there one piece of information that we didn't get to today that you say, hey, if a listener only hears the last minute and a half of the show, this is what I want them to know?
I would say that there's going to be massive confusion for the next 2 years, probably, in the real estate market, and that the consumer will set the new price like they could do now. There had to be no litigation.
Right.
Consumer sets what they want to pay for services, just like you do at a Snickers bar in the candy store. Everyone stops buying Snickers, that price will go down, right? Or people say, you know, I mean, so there's this, that effect is in control of the consumers on how there will be a reset. The consumers will be in control of how that reset looks. And in the meantime, yes, there'll be confusion because for someone who is using their VA loan, right now, per Veteran Affairs, they can't pay a real estate commission, Rick.
Right.
It's not allowed.
Right.
So if a veteran comes in my office, unfortunately, I can't help them, even if I want to do for free.
Yeah.
Because my deductible on my insurance is $1,000 for my errors and omissions, and I have to charge a minimum of that.
Mm.
So who's going to suffer? VA, unfortunately. I hope they get it figured out here quickly. And FHA, first-time home buyers will suffer. But prepare some confusion. And in the long run, I think this will do so much good for the industry and for the consumer. After the 2 to 3 years of pain, it'll be a great thing. I think we'll get more professionals in the business and a higher standard of service.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Justin, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming in this week.
Thanks for having me.
For joining us here on Money Matters. It's always great to be able to talk about the realities of whatever we're on, in particular, the real estate realities this week. Well, folks, we are out of time. That is it for this episode of Money Matters. But never fear, we will be back next week. We will be continuing to talk about your money because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.